A home invasion may be happening at your address, and it's not what you think.
The Echo is the personal assistant that can make your day-to-day life a bit easier. It can turn on lights, it can start a playlist, it can answer questions for you, it can order things on Amazon.
This is just like having a regular keyboard and typing in a request in Google, except you use your voice.
It's always listening.
It is always listening. And it stores about 60 seconds of what happened in the past, and then restores the next 60 seconds. It's always waiting for what is known as a wake word. It comes default Alexa because it's anthropomorphized and it feels like a wonderful person.
This is Understanding the Times Radio with Jan Markell. Jan meets again this hour with her frequent co-host Eric Barger from Take a Stand Ministries. Today's broadcast is the second of a two-part series on surveillance and the big technology companies. Are we being victims of data and privacy theft? In this session, Jan and Eric will finalize their research into this issue. We believe this will be as informative for you as it was for us. A little bit later, we'll tell you how you can get copies of both broadcasts in this series. Now with today's program, here's Jan.
And welcome to the program. And we are heading into part two of our home invasion two-part series. Eric Barger has returned to the studio so that we could wrap it up this hour. We began last weekend talking about a lot of things, the potential of tracking, the potential of what the social media is doing to a lot of people, some of the dangers involved. We touched a little bit on some of the Facebook scandal. I want to expand on that in just a moment. And basically, we were saying we live in a dangerous world, a dangerous time. And the big tech companies are taking advantage of that. Silicon Valley has a lot of products that are intriguing to everybody. They're also addicting and snaring a lot of people, not just young people, people of all ages. Your cell phone is addicting. You know that. All of you who have a cell phone, you'd admit that it's very, very addicting. It can do about 100 different little projects for you, and that's amazing. But then what about Amazon Echo and Google Home? You talk about an invasion into your home. You haven't seen anything yet until you tap into Amazon Echo and Google Home. So, Eric Barger, I'm glad you could swing by the studio and we'll do another hour on this topic.
Thanks, Jan. I'm glad to be here, of course.
You know, and you write and you've written at least three long articles on this, and I know you're going to turn that into something more substantive, both a DVD and a booklet, I believe. And at one point, you say, we sold our souls for Alexa with a question mark. What did you mean by that?
Well, the idea that we have given away our privacy, we have allowed this, what it comes down to, a speaker robot.
Yep.
In
You're
our
right.
home mm-hmm. to be able to be a convenience for us. We have paid money for it. Then for them to be able to take what they learned from us through it and advertise back to us. And if that wasn't disconcerting enough, that, you know, the Lord knows we all get enough advertising, no matter how much time we might spend in front of the TV or online or anywhere else, advertising is everywhere. But this is a way, it's a pipeline for them to know what we're thinking about, what we're talking about, what might be interesting to us. And that was some of the information I learned when I downloaded my Google profile. The different things that they had picked up on, my interests, who my family was by name, they've got all that. They're connecting together how they can best advertise a product or service to me that I will bite on and give a credit card and buy.
Mm-hmm.
And
well,
that's the bottom line there. But it's, as you and I pointed out last week, going to be more than that in the end.
Well, again, they would call this nothing but simple surveillance capitalism. This is all about making a lot of money. They would deny that there's any tracking that's involved, that they're trying to stalk anybody, trying to find out all the places you've been to. That's not true, because we've also heard the various accounts. We heard a clip last week. We heard your personal experience.
Exactly. Like I said, with the information I downloaded about myself, what Google has, they store location of where I've been. They store exactly where I've been, where I've driven, when I've used Google Maps.
Mm-hmm.
For example, every place I've been, I'm not talking about the last day. I'm talking about since I've had my phones and had Google Maps, they have stored that. They've stored the search history of things I've searched for online. They've created an advertising profile on me, information about my location, my age, my gender, my hobbies, my career, my interests, relationship status, whether I need to lose weight or not. Mm. Like it's their business.
Right.
But that's a big business, the weight loss. They have stored all the apps and extensions that I use and when I use them. They have stored all of the history of the things that have taken place, and it sounds really good. If you're a parent and you want to look out for your children, you can find out what they've been doing. It also stores whether I'm conservative or progressive, or whether I'm Jewish or Christian or Muslim or whatever I am, or whether I'm feeling depressed or suicidal or anorexic. That's the kind of stuff being stored. It is very, very personal, private information. They're storing everything from my calendar. And they know my future calendar if I use Google Calendars, which mm-hmm. is very, very convenient. It goes from device to device with me. If I'm on a computer or if I'm on my phone or my tablet, if I'm in the car, wherever I am, I can look and see what my schedule says. Well, sadly, they know what my schedule is going to be too. I don't think there's a lot of politicians probably using that kind of a calendar, because people whose lives would be at risk don't want anybody to know where they're going to be at a particular point in time. But that's what Google has on us.
Yep,
if we're using those services.
And you're right. People can set schedules and reminders, send voice texts and emails, quiz the machines on virtually any imaginable subject. This is, again, Alexa or Google Home. You can do a myriad of household chores, like setting the burglar alarm or desired temperature, music, or room lighting. But I wonder how many consumers understand both the short and long-term implications of making Google and Amazon's artificial intelligence unit a part of their family. And then you say, Eric, the Amazon Echo and Google Home units silently become phenomenal information stenographers, literally a digital sponge in our midst. They not only absorb all of the intended input we provide in interacting with them, but theoretically, they take in all of the sounds and perhaps the sights from our private environment. And that data, dear friend, is fed to the algorithm maze at Amazon or Google to be packaged into targeted, personalized advertising that Echo and Home users receive back via web ads, text push notifications, or emails. Again, mm-hmm. they would say that's surveillance capitalism. We don't have any evil intent. Hard to know.
Yeah, it is hard to know, but we know it's happening. And for us who value our privacy and value our autonomy, and like we said last week, we had nothing to hide. If you have nothing to hide, then you say, well, maybe this isn't that big a deal.
Yeah.
But again, it's where it may be marketed and where it may go. That should be a concern. You know, there's one survey that said 70 million U.S. households will have either Amazon Echo or Google Home by 2022.
That's right.
Would reach 55% of all homes. It's hard to say how many have been sold unless the companies will tell you. And Apple is going to have their own version of this. It's going to be much more expensive, as normal with Apple. But there are others out there as well. The Sonos company, Sonos One, has mm-hmm. has one of these too. So though Amazon is the most popular one, with Google Home being kind of a almost distant second, these things are on the rise, the home robots. And again, if you think that they're only listening when you say Alexa, or if you say OK Google, which is the keywords, if you think they're only listening then, it's coming out in real life surveys and talking to people in interviews. They're saying, no, I never gave it the command, but all of a sudden things began to appear in advertising that I was talking about at that point in time. Without giving it the command, it was hearing those things, and the algorithms took over and they began to market to me.
Last week, I quoted and played a clip of Tucker Carlson, Fox News, who was doing updates on this on a regular basis. He's very, very troubled by some of the things we're talking about. I want to play another clip here of Tucker, and he's talking about the Silicon Valley and what these products are doing to us. He also features a former Facebook founder, who, again, as we indicated last week, there are some of these execs who've left they've left Facebook, they've left Google, other places, and they've got deep regret. He's going to talk to one here.
In 1994, executives from the seven largest tobacco companies in America were summoned to Congress to explain themselves. In their testimony, the executives said that smoking cigarettes was not addictive. They were lying. They'd known all along about nicotine addiction, yet they continued to sell cigarettes. It was too lucrative to stop. Millions died as a result. Eventually, a wave of lawsuits forced the tobacco companies to admit that they knew this and to shell out hundreds of billions of dollars to victims and their lawyers. Suppressing smoking became a national priority. America understood that hurting people in order to get rich was wrong. Doing it on purpose is criminal. All of which raises serious questions tonight about Silicon Valley, about what their products are doing to this country, particularly to children, and how much tech executives know about the potential harm caused by what they're selling. Already, psychiatric research has produced some ominous findings on this. Social media use is connected to anxiety, depression, and social maladjustment, particularly among adolescents. The more time kids spend online, the unhappier they are. Data from the CDC show that suicide rates for teen girls in America are at a 40-year high, and they're way up for teen boys as well. Does technology play a role in those deaths? And for that matter, in a number of other serious pathologies that appear to be rising in America? Sean Parker seems to think so. Parker is not a research scientist. He's even more authoritative on this subject. He was Facebook's first president, and he helped design that website. Parker just gave a remarkable interview to a reporter from Axios in which he admits that he and other Facebook founders knew from the very beginning they were creating something harmful and addictive.
We need to sort of give you a little dopamine hit every once in a while because someone liked or commented on a photo or a post or whatever. It's a social validation feedback loop. It's exactly the kind of thing that a hacker like myself would come up with because you're exploiting a vulnerability in human psychology. And I think that the inventors, creators, you know, and it's me, it's Mark, it's Kevin Systrom at Instagram, it's all of these people, understood this consciously, and we did it anyway.
This is a bombshell. Imagine if the Sackler family, makers of the painkiller OxyContin, admitted they knew their product was likely to addict millions of Americans to opiates, but, quote, did it anyway. Now, that's pretty much exactly what happened with OxyContin, by the way. But so far, the Sacklers have been wise enough not to say so in public. Sean Parker isn't quite so guarded. In his conversation with Axios, Parker repeatedly describes Facebook like an addictive drug, which, of course, functionally it is. When he and his partners designed their product, Parker says they kept one question in mind. Quote, how do we consume as much of your time and conscious attention as possible? The answer they found was with a steady stream of dopamine hits to your brain in the form of likes, comments, and new posts. Parker acknowledges Facebook has become an epidemic that is devastating this country. Quote, it literally changes your relationship with society and each other, he said. God only knows what it's doing to our children's brains. Let that sink in. Imagine how you would feel if you actually believed you had injured the brains of millions of children. Sean Parker does not seem especially concerned by this. In fact, in his interview with Axios, he brags about how rich it has made him. Quote, because I'm a billionaire, I'm going to have better access to health care, Parker said. I'm going to be like 160, and I'm going to be part of this class of immortal overlords. You know the expression about compound interest? Give us billionaires an extra 100 years, and you'll know what wealth disparity looks like. The tobacco executives suddenly look decent by comparison. Yet unlike the heads of Philip Morris and R.J. Reynolds and Lorillard, Sean Parker and Mark Zuckerberg have not been hauled before Congress to account for themselves and what they've done. Why is that exactly? You'd hate to think it's because Silicon Valley gives far more money to politicians than the cigarette makers ever did. But who knows? Maybe there's a connection. We'll start asking members of Congress about it.
You're listening to Understanding the Times Radio. We're in a two-part series on home invasion. Your home is likely invaded, and if you're using various gadgets, I guarantee there's an invasion process going on. You got a tablet, iPhone, computer, various other kinds of devices today. And I'm talking for the couple of weeks here with Eric Barger. You often hear him as a radio co-host. These couple of weeks, he's my guest, but he's been researching and writing on home invasion for months. And let me ask you a couple of questions. You know, we've got listeners who are on social media. Your ministry and mine is on social media. You're still on Facebook. You're still doing Twitter, correct?
That's correct, yeah.
What do you have to say to listeners who are on the social media and how they might better protect their privacy? Should they even be on social media?
I think each person has to come to that place where they see how much it might dominate them. One of the concerns that both of the Facebook executives or former executives that we've talked about, one last week and one this week, we played clips of them. Both of them are concerned with how their kids are being affected or how children are being affected. Kids without a lot of life experience that have been only known Facebook, for example, and it becomes their life. Well, we know that a lot of the kids, a lot of the millennials and the Generation Z, which are coming up behind the millennials, those people, a lot of them, the social value of Facebook is that's how they communicate. And sadly, they want to text instead of talk. They have some of them have limited understanding or limited desire. I don't know if exactly the words that would be used by some of the experts, but they don't have that social skill to be able to talk. And they shy away from it. They would rather text. They would rather be on Facebook. They get a thrill from having a like from their friends. And it's that dopamine hit that both of these former Facebook executives use that phrase or that term. I wonder if they colluded together in this or if they talked about it because they use that same phrase. But we know something happened that they would both leave Facebook, and they seem to look at Facebook with disdain, yet I wouldn't say they've either one had some sort of a moral epiphany in the process of it, but they do see a problem with it.
Well, what I'm noticing, Eric, and you cite the younger generation and their preference to text, et cetera, email, whatever, Facebook. I'm noticing that with going all the way up folks into their late 50s, early 60s, there's a decline in communication skills because folks are no longer doing it audibly. They're doing their communication electronically. It's all ages. It's been kind of heartbreaking. Your world and my world, communication is huge. We write, we speak, our avocation is communication, but it's in decline, and I think this is one of the reasons.
I'm sure it is. I use Facebook and communicate with folks that way, but when people want to write me all the time on Facebook, I don't use Facebook Messenger because it is so intrusive, and I make that point, and I've written that in posts on Facebook, so people won't try to send me attachments and all that kind of thing on Facebook, and that's not the way to communicate with me. I'm trying to use it as a ministry tool and answer questions if I can to help people with the expertise I have in apologetics and prophecy and the other things we do in ministry. But so many people, this is their life. Those are all of their friends. And to ask them to back away, especially kids, the Generation Zs, the kids to back away. Well, without that life experience, do they really understand if they're addicted to something? So parents have to be plugged in to what their kids are onto on social media, and obviously we should be. I don't think we just give a child a cell phone and say, have fun. That's really a prescription for a terrible disaster.
Well, I featured a young lady on this program a couple of years ago now. Mariah was her name, and she was very definitely addicted to her phone and all that it could do, from Twitter, you name it, on down. And her mom took the phone away for a month, and there was complete outbreak of catastrophe. Now, it had a happy ending. Mariah suddenly realized after a month with no phone and all that it could do that she really could live without it. And she also realized she broke her family's heart by her behavior and was extremely repentant over all of that. So that story had a happy ending. Not all of them do.
No, they don't. Something else came up too, and this hasn't been advertised very widely, but as I was doing the research, I came across a new Facebook app called, are you ready? Facebook Messenger Kids, and it's specifically made for children. And I thought, just what we need, addict them young. Get them started.
Right, right.
And that, of course, is the business model to get their eyes onto Facebook or onto Google or whatever company you're working for as many hours as you can, and to sell them products. You want to sell the kids the same as you sell the adults.
Okay, when we get back, we're going to continue our discussion. I even want to quote, folks, you don't mind, I like to quote Rush Limbaugh when I get back, what he has to say about all of this. And he's a voice that a lot of people listen to, and I think he's really, really nailed it in a comment he made on his program. This would be 2-3 weeks ago now. You're listening to Understanding the Times Radio. I'm coming back in just a couple of minutes. Don't go away.
On today's Understanding the Times broadcast, you're hearing the second program in a two-part series. You may consider ordering both programs on compact disc to share this valuable information with your family and friends. To request the entire series on surveillance, the order line number 763-559-4444. Digital copies of this broadcast can also be downloaded from our website at olivetreeviews.org. Thanks to all of you for making this broadcast one of the most listened to programs on weekend radio. We invite you to become a financial partner with us. Consider a tax-deductible donation. Please send your gifts to Olive Tree Ministries, Box 1452, Maple Grove, Minnesota, 55311. Jen Markell and Eric Barger return right after this.
Understanding the Times 2018 is scheduled for September 29th this year, and we are starting a bit earlier, 8:30 a.m. to 5 p.m. You need a ticket, and they're selling fast. I'll give you a toll-free number in a moment. Our speakers include Amir Sarfati, Pastor Jack Hibbs, Pastor J.D. Farag, and Pastor Billy Crone. Once again, we meet at Grace Church in Eden Prairie, Minnesota, just outside Minneapolis. Grace Church has asked us to limit our attendance to just under 5,000. So here is the ticketing number for the Brush Fire Agency. Call toll-free 1-888-338-5338. That's 1-888-338-5338, Monday through Friday. Should you not be able to purchase a ticket, we will live stream the event on our website at no cost. Act today and don't be left behind. The fellowship with like-minded remnant believers is priceless, and you will leave the event like the sons of Issachar who understood the times.
It's estimated in London that at any given moment that you're being watched by at least three different cameras. Now, why is that? Well, it's a means of enforcing law. There's little respect for the law increasingly in this city. And why is that? Well, it could be because the city is becoming increasingly swollen with people from all over the world who don't share the same values. The result is that in an effort to enforce the law, cameras are everywhere.
How big tech companies are invading your privacy. That's the focus again today for this Understanding the Times broadcast. Thanks for joining us for this second of a two-part series. We continue now with Jan Markell and Eric Barger.
Do you ever feel like someone's watching you? Well, if you're a UK citizen, the government is attempting to step up its public surveillance policy and even snooping on your personal emails. Despite CCTV cameras already a major fact of UK life, there's now plans to store personal data, including information from social networking sites. And as RT's Ivor Bennett reports, it's the taxpayer who could be footing the bill.
Soon you could be watched everywhere you go in the UK, even where the cameras can't see you. All your emails, texts, and phone calls will be monitored under a new anti-terror spy plan. The government will know which websites you visit. It'll even snoop on your private Facebook messages. No matter who you are, all your personal data will be stored for a year in a massive surveillance operation privacy campaigners condemn.
This is the first step towards the government taking control of the internet. You know, the only place in the world that's got that kind of regulation is China. And I'm sorry, but Britain is not China.
Britain's already one of the most watched societies in the world. The number of CCTV cameras is estimated at nearly 2 million. Now the government wants to monitor all electronic communication as well, including social media, taking surveillance to a level never seen before. Just what you say in calls and messages won't be kept, but the government will know exactly who you speak to, when you do it, and where you are. It'll be stored by broadband and mobile companies, but security services will have real-time access at the click of a button, secretly living your life with you. Digital rights groups say it'll leave people living in fear of Big Brother.
Well, welcome back. And that little clip to indicate that the topic we're covering this week and last week, it's a global issue. It's not just a Western world situation, that being the privacy issue, the snooping. And Eric Barger, and that's who I'm talking to for these two programs. And in the presentation you're working on, which is not finished at this point, you focus in on China and the spying they're doing over there. Talk to me a little bit about that.
I just wrote a note of that. You didn't see it, but that's that was going to be my response here. We're incorporating several lengthy video clips, a couple of which we played audio from today, but they're going to be in the presentation we're putting together, which is going to be a couple of hours, maybe 2.5 hours long, and the booklet that is already done on this topic. And one of the most astounding things I ran across, I mean, it was like I sat there with my mouth open, was seeing this BBC reporter in China and having him report that they have 180 million closed-circuit cameras in action right now. And by 2020, they will have 400 million more. They're going to have nearly 600 million closed-circuit cameras in China to keep an eye on everybody in the population all the time, every street, every possible place, every public meeting place, certainly train station, you know, airports, etc., all that kind of thing. They are a surveillance society beyond all others, and I remember whispering about this to myself and then saying it to you and others. This is made for the Antichrist. They don't realize it, but they're going to hand this whole system over to Antichrist, and this is just the first country and just the beginning. Britain isn't far behind them right now. It's stunning to see it. And again, as we said last week, Antichrist could never have controlled the world, as the scripture says he will, until all of this was in place.
Correct. And Revelation 13 particularly indicates that he will be a global governor. He will govern the whole world via a single commerce system, single currency, a one world system. And he will tap in to all of this technology that is tailor-made for him. Church is gone during the tribulation time, but many are coming to faith. You talk about end-time revivals. That's when there's an end-time revival, is during the tribulation, as people are coming to faith. But oh, the price they're going to pay, because they cannot buy or sell. And the plagues, the seals, the judgments that are taking place, unbelievable. Let me just read. We're still on this topic of, we're going to hit into artificial intelligence here in just a moment, but this privacy invasion and the takeover by technology, Rush said on air very recently. He's real blunt, and I thought he made a profound point. These people are pure Stalinists, said Rush. He said, while they're running around calling Trump a Stalinist, they don't even know what it really is. Facebook now has the power to make or break publishers. If the latest news feed change is anything to go by, they're now keen on breaking them. He says the progressive social media platforms are threatened by conservatives. They wouldn't say threatened. They would say it's silly. It's destructive. It's mean-spirited. It's extremist. It's bigoted. You know, all the usual isms and that they associate. But what it really is, they're afraid of it. Limbaugh goes on to say they all have these cocoons they live in their alternative universe, where they feel safe and protected from any opposing view. All the snowflakes gather, and they're all protected. If anything gets into that, permeates the boundary, then Katie bar the door. And that's what we're looking at now. They've got to stop it, because they're not interested in debate. They're not interested in discussion or any of that. And then he closes, these are people who think socialism is great because they think socialism is justice, being nice to people, being fair. They have no idea what it even is. They don't realize it's one step away from murderous communism. It was Rush Limbaugh a few weeks ago, and I felt that he really nailed it there.
We know that the millennials, at least many of them, don't want to be challenged about anything, certainly don't want to be stretched. They don't want to be in the presence of any ideas or any people with ideas that they disagree with. They've been taught to, you know, create their own reality and think only the thoughts that they want to think, and this is why all the talk about puppy dogs and coloring books and safe spaces and so on has taken place. And of course, then they ride in the street if you dare challenge them with conservative, let alone a Christian idea. But they'll invite Amazon into their homes in such a way, for example, the Echo Look device will give you style advice. It will tell you if the outfit you have on looks good. It takes pictures of you. They want you to place this, of course, somewhere convenient, like in your bedroom, where you can have a picture of yourself before you walk out for the day to make sure that everything matches that you're wearing. Then it'll give you advice. They'll take advice from an algorithm at Amazon, but they don't want to hear anything about, for example, the foundation of our nation or about the biblical roots of our society, all those kind of things. They don't want to hear that. It is maddening. And so many times in this research, I kind of just throw my hands up. If I had papers in my hands, they go all over the place at that point. I would throw my hands up and go, what are these people thinking? But the problem is they've been trained by this kind of ideal since kindergarten, and now they're some of them postgraduates. And this is the stuff now that we are facing, and we're trying to get through to them, but they don't want to dialogue about it. If you can't dialogue with somebody, then what can you do? You have to live in two separate worlds, and if you come together, they won't listen to you. I'm willing to listen to them. They're not willing to listen. And that's a concern. I know I'm on a soapbox here, but it is part of this because many of these aspects of social media and of the technology we're talking about does directly relate to that kind of mindset.
I talked a little bit earlier about what can we possibly do? Do we just drop off of some of the social media sites? We can't honestly live without technology. The business and ministry world is quite tied to technology. It runs our businesses and runs our ministries. You write this, Eric, and I'm talking to Eric Barger last weekend and this weekend. You can learn more at his website, ericbarger.com, ericbarger.com. And you say this, and you've written so much on it. You say, rather than unplugging from the online world altogether, we might consider hitting refresh instead. Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, Instagram, and other platforms represent millions of lost people, and we've been commissioned to reach them. This is why our ministry targets users on these and other social sites unless one simply needs to step away from the mouse and the keyboard for a season, refocusing what we do online with the goal of representing God and kingdom principles on social media could position us to be instruments for his service, which is exactly what he has called us to be. And we were talking about that a few minutes ago, and I appreciated the way you kind of summed that up. You know, let's be salt and light and try to delay the decay that's going on amidst this kind of technology.
Well, yeah, the delay is coming, even though people in the culture around us who don't understand biblical principles would say, oh, look at the great advancements. Mm-hmm. But those advancements are going to come back to bite human beings, even though we do see great advancements in the medical field and others that we've talked about last week and that we talk about often. But it is going to come back to bite us. I don't always want to pour water on everybody's, you know, good time.
Yeah.
But I do want to bring us back to the idea that all these things are leading to one spot, and that is to a one-world government. That's to a one-world religion and one-world economy. It's going that direction, and this technology will make that possible in a way that could never have been conceived before.
Another thing that never could have been conceived before, Eric, is, and we covered this last winter in January, I believe, you and I talked extensively with Pastor Billy Crone, who's one of my conference speakers this fall. We talked about the artificial intelligence issue. I want to revisit that for just a minute here. Let's take our time revisiting it, but because I spotted some headlines here over the winter. I saw a troubling headline, ex-Google executive Anthony Lewandowski is founding a church where people worship an artificial intelligence God. I saw another headline, why humans will happily follow a robot messiah. I started watching videos online of robots who look human and who seem to think, we know they aren't, but they're being programmed with artificial intelligence, and it's as almost as though they're capable of thinking. They're capable of having a conversation with you and me, Eric, and it may be more intelligent by way of conversation than some real people we talk to. They answer questions. They seem to process real thoughts. And developers of those robots say someday they will solve society's problems. That's very possible. And such men also believe that it's possible for artificial intelligence to be a billion times smarter than humans. Now try to process that. Artificial intelligence, a billion times smarter than humans. Now, in some of my research, Eric, we know that Google tries to be artificial intelligence, but now even the founder, or one of the CEOs, he's past CEO, Eric Schmidt, is now he's speaking as though he's terrified of what he invented or what he has been promoting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's warning just before he stepped down from being CEO, and he's really the one who brought Google into the prominence it is today. But he's saying that AI out of control in the hands of tyrannical governments could cause those governments to want to, one, first of all, overthrow one another so there's mm-hmm. only one, and then to try to overcome the world. And he used China and Russia as examples. So I thought that was very, very interesting. And he joined some other big brains in the world about the idea that because AI, many of the programs written for AI, and don't claim to be an expert on all of this, but I understand it from this angle, that AI builds on itself, betters itself, corrects itself, and eventually, because of that, becomes smarter than those who have programmed it. And that is a problem if left out of control. And in some places, they're already saying, well, we're not exactly sure how to stop this. You know, Facebook and Microsoft both launched their own versions of AI online. Microsoft had to take its down after one day because the users were teaching it to use racial slurs and that kind of thing. And it just, you know, Microsoft wasn't going to put up with that. So it took it down. In Facebook's case, they had two AIs. These two AIs were beginning to have conversations that they weren't programmed to have. And they were beginning to talk about being totalitarian over the rest of the internet and that kind of thing. That's a one way to say it. But because they were having these scary conversations they weren't programmed to have, but these two AIs were doing it, Facebook had to shut that down. So this is the stuff that's out there just kind of for us to get a glimpse of. Imagine that the things we know about in the military that are now attached to artificial intelligence, what we know about is probably 20 to 30 years out of line. In other words, they're so far ahead. We know about this stuff, but the stuff we don't know about, they're way, way further down the road than what we understand in the public. AI is definitely a part of this. And when Amazon Echo or Google Home answers you, that's AI at work.
That's right.
It is picking those
things. I'm glad you clarified that. Yeah.
Yeah. It is picking those things up and it is answering you. Same thing. If I turn to my phone, I have a phone with the Android system. And if I say, okay, Google, my phone comes to life. In fact, it just did it here on my desk in front of me. It did it. You know, it comes to life when you make that statement and it wants to know what you want and it's listening and it's willing and it's ready to give you an answer or tell you what restaurant to go to or tell you what store to go to or whatever it is or give you products on your phone that you can then satisfy whatever it was you ask about. It's that's AI at work.
Well, we opened this two-part series last week and we opened our opening paragraph. I think we commented about the prophecy in Daniel 12, the end time increase in knowledge. It'll be increase in travel, increase in knowledge, and that's how this all has come into the forefront here in the last 50, 60, certainly 70, 80 years. And going back to some some comments I saw as I was researching artificial intelligence, and here's what some of the leaders in this field have said. The human era could be ending and machines will take over. Another one says, he who develops AI rules the world. We aren't going to be able to control it. And then I believe it's Elon Musk says, we are summoning up demons. Now, that is quite a statement for a secular guy to come on and say, we are summoning up demons.
Yeah, that was his stab at saying something biblical. He kind of missed it in his quote, but I know what he was saying. Mm-hmm. I recognize what he was saying. He's a very, very sharp guy, and I've been following SpaceX, and their ability to do what they're doing is pretty phenomenal. And, of course, he's one of the richest. I think he's the 20th richest man in the world is where he stands right now. You know, a little while ago, and I don't want this to pass us by on this segment, Jan, we were talking about, or you were talking about, how they believe, the world around us believes, that AI will solve all of mankind's problems. AI will never solve the sin problem in the heart of man.
Amen.
And that's the thing. The world is looking for solutions and looking for it, as usual, as they always have, in the wrong place. There's only one answer for that.
Amen. Yes. Some of the others are saying, again, AI will be smarter than humans and will become a god. Well, it has become a god. It's just a god with a small g, and the god of the universe still has the final say. We're going to wrap up our two-part series on, well, invasion, home invasion. When we come back, take a short time out. Don't go away. Back in just a couple of minutes.
Parliament has just decided on a massive expansion in surveillance powers, which critics have labelled as dangerous and terrifying. The bill was introduced by now Prime Minister Theresa May in 2012, and after 4 years and several attempts, the law has finally been passed by both houses. The bill will allow the government to see what everybody's web history from within the last year is. Everything from Amazon shopping to what you watch in your, alone time. It will also force companies to decrypt data on demand and will allow the government to interfere, i.e. hack, into devices of citizens, although some professions like journalists and medical staff will have slightly better protection. This is all in spite of the bill being opposed by representatives of the UN and many leading rights groups, as well as the fact that 3/4 of people feel that privacy, which this new law almost entirely erodes, is a human right.
If you've just joined us here on Understanding the Times Radio, you're listening to the second of a two-part series on corporate surveillance in America. You can order the entire series when you call 763-559-4444. Did you know Olive Tree Ministries has a new fresh website? We hope you've had a chance to review it. If not, be sure to click on to olivetreeviews.org and let us know how you like it. We are so grateful for all our prayer financial partners for your continued support. We welcome your tax-deductible gifts when you write to Olive Tree Ministries, Box 1452, Maple Grove, Minnesota, 55311. Please stay with us for more from Jan and Eric.
Years ago, Understanding the Times Radio began on one radio station in the Minneapolis area. We now air on almost 830 stations and around the world electronically. You made that possible. People really do want the inconvenient truth. Radio costs are substantial, so think about a tax-deductible gift to Olive Tree Ministries to keep this message alive. You can give conveniently online at olivetreeviews.org or by calling us at 763-559-4444, 763-559-4444, or just drop a check to Olive Tree Ministries, Box 1452, Maple Grove, Minnesota, 55311. That's Box 1452, Maple Grove, Minnesota, 55311. This is Radio for the Remnant, but let's help the remnant grow by giving them the truth each week on Understanding the Times Radio.
Once again, Eric Barger from Take a Stand Ministries has been our guest these past two editions of Understanding the Times. Here to wrap up our two-week discussion, Jan Markell.
And welcome back. Quick reminder, Understanding the Times 2018, Saturday, September 29th, 8:30 a.m. to 5 p.m. Amir Sarfati, J.D. Farag, Billy Crone, and Pastor Jack Hibbs. And you gotta have a ticket this year. And I've been explaining along the way that we've had crowding problems, and the church asked us to ticket the event. If this has been an inconvenience to you, we apologize. We had no choice, so would you go to our website and get all that information. We're using the Brush Fire Ticketing Agency, and the 800 number, 888 number, is on our website. Sign up for my print and e-newsletter. That's how I stay in touch with you. The program is always posted both to my website, olivetreeviews.org, olivetreeviews.org on Saturday morning, and you can tap into the mobile app of oneplace.com, where the program is posted also every Saturday morning. And I know you're running around kind of crazy-like in these days, and you don't always have time to hear the whole program or any of it. Find it online, olivetreeviews.org or oneplace.com. If you do send us a gift, would you always tell us what station you listen to? You can get a CD of any program. Say, I recommend you get a couple of CDs of this invasion series we've done, 2 weeks with Eric Barger in studio with me. And I want to make just a couple of comments here. I want to play a soundbite. I want Eric to kind of wrap things up as well. And I saw recently where somebody said that well, I could give his name. I don't think it's important. Somebody said that, I believe it was Google, had collected 5.5 gigabytes of data on him. That is an equivalent of some, listen up, folks, 3 million Microsoft Word documents. That's how much had been accumulated from this individual. Facebook, meanwhile, collected 600 megabytes of information on him, equivalent to roughly 400,000 documents. I think it's safe to say that just about anything and everything is being, well, seized from you, from personal information, your location, gender, age, hobbies, career, interest, relationship status, your weight. Do you need to lose weight? How much weight do you need to lose? Your income. And Google stores information on every app and extension you use, how often you use them, where you use them, who you use them with to interact, and who do you talk to on Facebook, what countries are you speaking with, what time do you go to sleep? That's been the point of these 2 weeks, has been the invasion. If you think that you are not being watched or listened to, some way or another, you really are. Who's going to take advantage of that in the last days? Well, we're heading towards the end of the end times, and there's going to come on the scene a man with a plan, Mr. Fix-It, who's going to come on the scene when there's going to be a lot of chaos, and he's going to say, I can fix it. But one of the ways that he'll try to fix it is with this kind of technology. Well, the system is all set. It's been prepared for him, and I appreciated what my guest for the last two weekends, Eric Barger, wrote, because he's written, you can find it at ericbarger.com, extensively about home invasion. And he says, we who understand truth and error and who know because of the scriptures where all of the events around us are leading stand directly in the path opposing the grand plans of the globalists. That plan is, of course, the building of the utopian one world system. Nationalists, patriots, conservatives, and above all, biblical Christians are already disdained, ridiculed, and even hated by the growing numbers of socialists surrounding us. Someday we will be the enemy of the state. And Eric, I think we are the enemies of the left for sure, and they seem to have more power than we would like. Where do you see this leading?
Well, as we've said over and over, this the whole idea of the technology, what Google and Facebook and others are doing, you know, you mentioned, as I did earlier, some of the areas of things that are being tracked. Well, one of the things being tracked is, are you conservative or liberal? What right. religion are you? Are you a Second Amendment advocate? That kind of stuff. Somebody's taken note here. And with the ability to be able to scan through the records of millions, if not billions of people, they can find out who is advocating what and when and where and all those kind of things. And what's happening is our autonomy and our privacy, as one of the soundbites pointed out, or a fellow in the soundbite last week, our privacy is probably a thing of the past right. as we've understood mm-hmm. privacy to be. That doesn't change anything to what we are to do. And I realize that not all the listeners get to hear every part of every program. We hope they download the program and go get the podcast, go to oneplace.com, get the podcast and listen to it and share it with others. But if you're not doing that, maybe you didn't hear us say, your job doesn't change. Your job as a Christian, the reason you exist, the reason you're breathing air, I don't know how else to put it, it has not changed at all. We have to understand that though there are forces around us, we would like not to know what we are doing just because we don't want to be put on somebody's list that we are a subversive because we are a Bible-believing Christian. But that's what's yeah. happening around us. And people in other places in the world, Jan, as we know, they are already feeling this kind of heat because the wrath of men is something that we're not guaranteed not to feel. And they're already feeling that kind of heat. Where this goes, though, where this goes in the very end, mm-hmm. it's like I don't want to say exactly what I think might take place as far as all the events that would take place, but I know where it finally ends up. And, of course, that, as we've said again and again, and it sounds like a broken record, but it ends up in the hands of the Antichrist mm-hmm. and his system.
Before that happens, I think Congress may want to step in, and they often do that when, and in March, this terrible Facebook, I'm going to call it a scandal, broke, and I would have to say even the left is angry right now at Mark Zuckerberg and, mm-hmm. and some of his tracking devices that he perpetrated and probably continues to. I'm going to close here with just a quick CNBC soundbite, and it's talking about what's coming next, and I think it sums it up well.
Still no word from Mark Zuckerberg or Sheryl Sandberg in the Facebook Cambridge Analytica scandal, we're calling it that. This as regulators around the world begin to turn the heat up on the company. The stock continuing to fall, down about 1% today, down about 10% this week. It's lost more than $60 billion in market cap just in the last two sessions. Joining us now from Washington, former SEC Commissioner Harvey Pitt, currently CEO and Managing Director at Kalorama Partners, and also with us, former White House Political Director and CNBC contributor Sarah Fagan. Welcome to you both. Sarah, let me just start with you. What is the appropriate role of regulation here? There are people calling for a new digital agency like the EPA. Is that enough, or will customers ultimately, can you trust the market to do the right thing and say, you know what, I'm over this website and I'm leaving and that's it?
Now, I think Facebook's reach is too great for customers to walk away from it. There's not an alternative right now for people to communicate with their friends, at least in the way those of us over the age of 25 do it. You know, here's the thing. You've got Republicans and Democrats alike asking very serious questions. And I think that this is not likely to have a happy ending for Facebook. I think you will see years of regulation, years of investigations, questioning about their data practices, their privacy restraints for consumers, and they're likely to face significantly more regulation, and this is not going to go away anytime soon.
Harvey, in terms of what Facebook has and hasn't done wrong here, clearly they say that they weren't hacked and that they were duped, as it were. Is that a fair response from them?
No, I think it's actually a very poor response. The statement is accurate but false. It isn't really a question of whether they were hacked. It's a question of whether their data was used for improper purposes, and that, it seems, clearly occurred. So denying a hacking is just basically trying to deflect the problem in the hopes that it will go away. And this problem is simply too large to go away.
Harvey, what was the improper usage, as far as you can tell?
Well, the improper usage is that this company, Cambridge Analytica, apparently received data on about 50 million Facebook users and attempted to use that in terms of a political campaign. It doesn't really matter what the use was. Facebook had already been sanctioned previously by the FTC. It has had data problems, and it apparently knew about this for 2 years, and yet the data was used for improper purposes.
Okay, Eric, why don't you give me your final thoughts as we go out of the program today?
Well, the regulation aspect of Facebook will be one thing. Elon Musk, the University of Cambridge and others are calling for AI to be regulated worldwide.
Right.
And Musk is making the statement that it may already be too late to rein it in. So we may see how that plays out in the span of our lifetimes as well. It may be sooner rather than later. But I want to remind folks as we close, and maybe this is a more positive note. It wasn't for Daniel, but at least not in the short term anyway. But Daniel chapter 6, the famous story of the lion's den, and how he got there is what I want to talk about for a second, because we aren't the first society to be surveilled. We aren't the first ones. We aren't the first ones to be surveilled by people who don't like our political or religious ideas. And so Daniel had that happen as people simply stood outside of his house, out of view, and listened to him as he faced toward Jerusalem and as he spoke to God Almighty. And then, of course, they went to the king, and they reminded the king of the edict he'd put out that no one could do that for 30 days, and the king was then forced into putting Daniel in the lion's den. We're not the first ones to be surveilled, but it didn't work out too well for those who surveilled Daniel, did it? Let's remember that those who have nefarious ideas and want to use our information incorrectly, who want to steal our identities possibly, who want to do damage to us personally and our families or to the kingdom of God in general, it doesn't work out good for them in the end. And if we keep it all in perspective and understand that we're living in the perilous times, this is the day that Paul talked about. There is so much going on, as Jan, we talk about so often, there's too much going on to keep track of. Nobody can do it. If I had an army of assistants and secretaries, I couldn't do it. It would be hard to know where to turn and what to talk about. But I've always tried to just let God lead me in what I speak about or what I write about, as you have too. And that's exactly how we prepare for radio, as well as our writings and so on. And we're trying to lay out things to help the church understand the day that we live in, like the men of Issachar.
Yes.
Daniel had surveillance brought against him. If it happens to us, God's still in charge. Mm-hmm. And let's keep that perspective, that above all things, God knows what's going on. He is the one that's on the throne. It is He we answer to and He we serve.
I want to thank you for listening, folks. We'll talk to you next week.
We are a moment, You are forever, Lord of the ages, God before time. We are a vapor, You are eternal, love everlasting, reigning on high.
Thank you for joining us for today's Understanding the Times Radio with Jan Markell. Across America and across the World Wide Web, we continue to report current events from a biblical perspective. Every weekend, this broadcast comes to you at no cost, but it costs us thousands of dollars. As we produce and distribute this weekly media outreach, would you consider standing with us? With an ever-changing world, men and women of faith need to keep informed. They need to be aware of current events as viewed through the lens of Scripture. Week after week, Jan Markell brings you a compelling hour, pointing out the dangers in today's culture and bringing hope through faith in Jesus Christ. We're asking you to join us in this listener-supported ministry as our financial partner. Please write with your tax-deductible gifts to Olive Tree Ministries, Box 1452, Maple Grove, Minnesota, 55311. Contributions are also welcome at olivetreeviews.org or by phone when you dial 763-559-4444. Don't forget, global updates with a biblical worldview are yours around the clock at olivetreeviews.org. We look forward to hearing from you soon. We appreciate your continued prayer support for Jan and her media team. Jan Markell returns next week with another information and inspiration-packed hour, designed to help you understand the times.